Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll start today with the historic news from Wellesley College. The famed women's college announced its 14th president today. She's Dr. Paula Johnson, and she's the first African-American president at Wellesley. Johnson has long been a groundbreaking leader in the field of women's health. She founded the Connors Center for Women's Health and Gender Biology at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, where she is also chief of the Division of Women's Health. Johnson graduated from Harvard as an undergrad, went on to Harvard Medical School, and completed her medical training at the Brigham. And she's written extensively about health disparities and about the overlap between health care and civil rights. So, why the jump to a college presidency now? We met with Dr. Paula Johnson on the Wellesley campus a little earlier today.
It's a tremendous honor, and quite frankly, right now I'm just feeling all kinds of emotions of just overwhelming joy and pride to be able to lead this amazing institution with its history, with its focus on educating women who make a difference in the world over generations. And where my life path has led me, which is focused on women, to kind of come to this point in my life is a dream come true.
Well, so what made this the right moment for you to transition into academic leadership on this scale?
I have focused on in medicine, in women's health, and focused on women in general, improving their health, educating them, and really focused on their development. And that journey, which has been a wonderful journey, got me really thinking and focused on higher education and really looking back a bit and thinking about the opportunities to shape the lives through the educational experience of young women. And I also have done a lot of thinking about my own field of women's health, which is really taking biology and thinking about biology through a very different lens, and then combining it really with other fields, sociology, economics, and others. And if you think about that, those are so rooted in the liberal arts. And without a strong liberal arts base, the field of women's health would not exist. So it's the convergence of my long and deep interest and focus on women and thinking about this field and backing it up a bit and really becoming quite passionate about higher education and higher education for women.
Huh. Interesting, because, on the trip over here, I was thinking that for so long you've been a vocal leader on exactly these issues that you were talking about. I mean, specifically, we were looking back at articles that you'd written about highlighting, obviously, health disparities between women and men, between people of color and white patients. And to be perfectly honest, in the field of healthcare, although there have been people who've been drawing attention to these disparities for quite some time, it feels as if only relatively recently it's become something that medicine and the healthcare field overall are talking about and talking about in a way of like, what can we do about it? So I guess that's my way of asking, was this a difficult decision for you to make? Because it seems as if some of the work that you've been doing for so long, healthcare itself is at a turning point, and you could actually maybe accomplish a great deal in terms of closing those disparity gaps between women and men, people of color, et cetera.
No, it's a great question. And, if you think about where we are today, those differences, the disparities are highlighted. And we've done a lot of work, not only on the discovery side, the science side, but how do we also change the policies so that science is actually done differently, is performed differently. But it really takes young people who are thinking differently to make that change a transformational change and to make that change one that is sustaining. And that, in many ways, is what excites me about Wellesley. As we think about educating our young women, allowing them and nurturing them to grow and to think critically, to think out of the box, to ask the questions that we haven't asked, that is exactly the kind of thinking we need to advance fields of science, medicine, and so many more in our country, in our world. And so in many ways, what I've worked on with my colleagues, who will absolutely continue the work and will continue to grow it, what we are now doing is ensuring that we are educating that next generation to, in fact, take it yet a step farther. And so in many ways, it's a natural continuation of the work I've really spent over my life.
I do want to get to your background a little bit more in a second, but it seems as if you're saying that there's also something unique that you yourself can bring to Wellesley, being a physician, a scientist, to a historically liberal arts college.
I would hope so. And no, I do think that my background, once again, which is somewhat different, even in medicine, you know, I think bringing the field that we, with my colleagues, have nurtured, but also thinking about other fields, the field of public health. You know, health is influenced by the environment, and there are very significant sex differences. How do we begin to think about that lens and then bringing it to the policy side? There are opportunities to bring that framework to a liberal arts college in a way that allows young women to imagine opportunities for them that either exist today or even might not exist. The opportunities, the field that I'm in, didn't really exist in this way when I was in college. So for me, having a strong liberal arts education, really being encouraged to think differently, to think and to ask questions that, quite frankly, weren't being asked, really led to this work. So I think bringing my own experience, which is deeply rooted in the academy, gives me not only that lens, but I think it also gives me the lens of really appreciating the academic culture, the deep commitment by the faculty to the Wellesley mission and to academic excellence. I think it gives me a lens from several directions. And there's one other area that I think is worth talking about, which is that, you know, the health of our students across the country is an area that many colleges and universities are looking at. And my experience in women's health, looking at sex differences, I think will also help me bring that expertise to Wellesley. You know, we know that rates of depression and anxiety in high school students are at an all-time high. And we also know that there are significant sex differences in how those disorders are experienced. Women, young women, having higher rates of depression, higher rates of anxiety. These are our students. How do we ensure that we create the healthiest environment possible so that when our students leave us and enter an ever-increasingly complex world, they are not only educated in the most traditional sense, but they are also leaving with a healthy body and a healthy mind. And I think when you think about all three of those, that is what launches our next generation in the most powerful way.
So there are many reasons that I'm sure that Wellesley is celebrating luring you over here. On the flip side of that, I imagine Brigham and Women's Hospital is weeping at your departure, over your departure. But if we could, let's talk for a moment about your sort of personal path, mm-hmm. if we could. Because I read that, so you grew up in Brooklyn.
I did. Before it was a cool place to live.
Yeah, before it was hip and impossible.
Right, in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, and impossible
when
to afford
to live bankrupt.
There. But I read that you didn't have, there weren't a lot of doctors in your family, or you didn't have any mentors in the medical field as a young person?
Oh, no.
How did you know you wanted to be a doctor, then?
you know, it was interesting. So my my mother was a school secretary, and she unfortunately passed away. I mean, it's one major regret of mine that she is not here to share this moment with me. I have a sister who's 3 years younger, and my father, who's 86, is still alive and will be here today. But I had, you know, although they were not college graduates, a very strong family, and my mother was incredibly committed to our education, to our independence, to our developing strong minds. And I didn't have any doctors in the family, but, you know, I unfortunately had my beloved grandmother, my mother's mother, suffered from depression, very serious depression over her life. And I saw that journey and saw what she faced. And I think just like many young people, when you see the adversity, you want to think about how might I be a part of the solution. And so I think very early on, that was part of what motivated me to want to be a physician.
Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit more about life growing up in Brooklyn?
So I grew up in a neighborhood. Back then it was called Flatbush. Now it's called Prospect Lefferts Gardens. It's the non-fancy side of Prospect Park, and went to public school. Went to public elementary, junior high school, and high school. You know, my mother was extremely influential and important in finding the best schools that she could for us in the area. You know, I really wanted to go to a fine liberal arts college. And I was 15 when I started looking at colleges. I was 16 when I left, so I was very young. And I ended up coming here to Harvard Radcliffe.
Wow. I only say wow because 16.
Yeah, I was 16.
Oh, and then Harvard Medical School.
Yes.
And then you did your residency here.
At Brigham and Women's. A master's in public health as well during my medical school years. Took off some time, did that. And then trained in
cardiology,
internal medicine, and then medical cardiology.
Okay.
And practiced in transplant. But my earliest work as an investigator, as a clinical investigator, was really understanding the sex and race differences in how patients experience symptoms of a heart attack and what the medical system does or doesn't do in response to those symptoms. So how do we better understand differences in presentation of illness between women and men and minority women? And then how do we think about the healthcare system's response, which then led to work on how do we change that system? And that's really the earliest roots of my work in women's health, which then at the Connor Center really is across all disciplines.
Your trajectory, regardless of your race or gender, has been phenomenal. You're an incredibly accomplished person. But as an African-American woman, I'm wondering, you know, were there challenges that you faced as you rose through the ranks in medicine?
There, you know, when you are in the minority, there always are. And I think that the sometimes the lack of seeing people like you in leadership, that's a gap. And there aren't many. And so for me, I think I've always been very cognizant of that, have looked for mentors, and I say mentors or people to bring into the fold for my own life. And it's usually not one, but many who serve different roles. But internalizing that and then understanding what it takes to lead either a division or the center that I lead, and internalizing those experiences and making sure that we really rethink how we lead. What is inclusive leadership? How do we ensure voices are heard? How do we ensure we pattern and model the behavior and allow people into our lives to understand what is possible for them? I think that's been a theme of my own leadership, you know, at Brigham and Women's, and I would hope, and at Harvard Medical School, and I would hope that is a theme of my leadership. And I think what I would bring to Wellesley, as we think about how to make Wellesley, it's already committed to diversity, equity, inclusion. But as we think about even deepening those commitments, how do we bring my life lessons to my leadership here at Wellesley?
Well, Dr. Paula Johnson, it was announced today that she will serve as the 14th president of Wellesley College beginning in July. Thank you so much for speaking with us, and congratulations once again.
Thank you, Meghna, and it was wonderful. Thank you for spending the time, and it is a tremendous honor, and I'll look forward to the journey.
And we look forward to talking with you many times.
Thank you.
Along that journey.
Thank you.
Well, Dr. Johnson's appointment as president of Wellesley College is the first bit of groundbreaking news out of Massachusetts today. You'll get the other bit of news a little later in the show, so stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.